Digital Flotsam is made possible by the generous support of the Robert Wood Johnson Company, makers of prosthetic Wood Johnsons for more than half a century. Because nothing feels better than wood.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. Merriam-Webster defines a pipe dream as an illusory or fantastic plan, hope, or story. While I hope you think that this is a fantastic story, it's really the origin of the term that causes me to call this edition of Digital Flotsam pipe dreams. I guess I'm what you'd call a 60s flower child. I went from the tender age of 12 to the ripe old age of 22 during the 60s decade. It was the age of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I was 2 for 3. The rock and roll down. I was a big fan and a budding practitioner. I worked as a lowly busboy at a roadside restaurant so I could save up a staggering $45 to buy a Japanese electric guitar with an action so high it was barely playable. I hung out with my buddies in the enclosed metal staircases of the projects because the echo was so cool as we harmonized all the doo-wop hits of the day. Sex down also. In that short 10-year span, I went from the educational experience of finding Dad's porn stash all the way to the ultimate realization of becoming a father at the age of 19. The 60s version of me once actually performed, as they say, for a continuous 6 hours. I was sore, yes, but unlike the ads that tell you to consult a doctor if it doesn't subside in 4 hours, I did it without a blue pill and without consulting a physician. In those glorious days, a slight breeze was enough to make me as firm as a ripe zucchini. But be that as it may, I failed miserably at the third element of the 60s. Almost everything was against me. First, I was very, very chicken. While all my buddies were diving in head first, no pun intended, I still looked at drugs with a sense of mystery and fear. My girlfriend Roz, who I would eventually knock up and marry, was the complete opposite. She went to the High School of Performing Arts, which those in the know simply called PA, and that the world would eventually know through the movie Fame. The school taught all of the New York State academic requirements, but the main focus was the performing arts, drama, music, and dance. Folks in this school were doing drugs long before folks in my school ever even heard of drugs. When Roz and I were going out, in her school, grass was all hat, and LSD was the new thing to check out. In my school, grass was mysterious and a little scary, and LSD was the most frightening thing I ever read about in Life magazine. Once during those days, Roz and I visited the apartment of a friend of hers from school, Ray Maldonado. Ray was a trumpet player. Ray went on to be a rather well-known trumpet player, first in the world of Latin jazz and salsa, and then as Stevie Wonder's horn arranger. Well, needless to say, I was very impressed by this guy. He was a real musician, and I considered myself sort of an embarrassing wannabe musician. So during that first meeting, I wanted to seem as hip as possible. I wanted to look like I knew what I was talking about, despite the fact that I really didn't have a clue. Ah, youth. Ray, I guess I should tell you, eventually died from a heroin overdose. Ah, youth. Well, anyway, just a little ways into this visit, Ray breaks out some grass and rolls one. He lights it up, puffs, and talks in that now familiar voice of someone trying to talk and hold his breath at the same time. I am freaked. I have never even seen this before. Now I can actually smell it, and it smells absolutely putrid to me, repulsive. It is offered to me, I decline, and Roz declines. I believe Roz declined out of deference to me. I'm sure had I not been there, she would have eagerly shared. My point is, though, that I was actually chicken. I was afraid of the idea that puffing on this rank-smelling, poorly formed cigarette would somehow alter my perception. But that part is not the important part of my lifelong relationship with the weed. It will take me a full 20 years to finally discover that. Okay, let's jump ahead just a few years. I am now married to Roz, the same woman I'm married to today, and we have a bunch of friends over our apartment. A friend breaks out a big stash, and the smoking begins. Now, I had been quite comfortable with not partaking. I'd get plenty of chiding from my friends, but it was all good-natured, and nobody seemed to push too hard or too long. But this particular night, for some reason, I felt almost eager to get high, so I forced myself to partake. I really despise the smell and the taste, but I carefully did it all correctly. I waited, and I waited, and I waited to feel something, but I never did. I pretended I was high, because everyone else was so excited, but in reality, it was just me being funny. I later confessed to Roz that I had pretended, and she said I had never been funnier. I assumed that was because they were high. Well, eventually, everyone knew that I wasn't getting high, and everybody had a theory, and everybody had a recommendation about what I needed to do. I smoked pounds of the stuff. I ate it. I did anything anyone suggested, but no joy. I'll bet that just like my friends back then, many of my present-day listeners are thinking of things I should have done. I'll bet if he did it this way, he'd get high. That's the way it was for me for a long, long time. It got so I stopped telling all but my very closest friends that it just wasn't working. It was easier to smoke and act like I was high. Well, one day, this really good buddy and downstairs neighbor named Peter offered me some weed, saying this was going to really do it for me. Now, he knew the truth. He knew how much I had tried before, and he knew that it never worked, but yet he was still trying. He put some into a tobacco pipe with a tinfoil liner in the bowl and passed it to me. He was so enthused, I didn't have a heart to tell him no, that he was wasting his time and his grass, so I took my tokes every time it was passed to me. I guess I should tell you something important now. Remember I mentioned 20 years later? Well, around 20 years later, I learned the truth. That some folks, like me apparently, are totally immune to marijuana. It has absolutely no effect. It's a documented fact. For what it's worth, I am also immune to Tylenol and ibuprofen. Go figure. But back to the story. I smoked this grass with my buddy Peter, and I'll be damned, I'm starting to feel something. I am so thrilled after all this trying. I demand and get another pipeful all for myself. I am finally going to understand what this grass business is all about. Excited, we rush upstairs to tell Roz. There, we share another pipeful. Well, everyone is excited about my way overdue entry into the world of the believers. What nobody knows at this time is that A, I am indeed immune to marijuana and always will be, and that B, unbeknown to all of us, this batch of grass has been liberally laced with opium.
Poppies will put them to sleep.
There is a good reason I had chosen this time to finally get high, and it had nothing to do with marijuana. As excited and eager as I was, it did not go very well from that moment on. First, Roz decided to make us some coffee, something very common in our house. When it was ready, she put the steaming mugs in front of each of us and sat down to enjoy her own. I looked down at my cup, and instantly I realized that something was wrong. My cup of coffee, and in fact, everything I looked at, was now on something like a movie screen, a flat surface. Not real, but a picture. Roz, Peter, the coffee, were all on this flat surface. This was interesting enough, but it also presented some problems for me. I really wanted a cup of coffee. I puzzled over this problem for a minute, and then I tried something bold. I reached for the coffee. Damn! My hand went out onto the movie screen, grabbed the coffee cup. I leaned forward and took a sip. Oh my God, I was drinking a cup of imaginary coffee right off of a movie screen. This experience only took me a few minutes to get uncomfortable with. This was, after all, impossible, and therefore very disturbing. So I'm beginning to believe that I am not going to enjoy this experience. I tried to clear my mind, but I didn't seem to be the one in control. All my prior experience at getting high involved alcohol. And what did you do if you got too drunk? Sleep. Sleep it off. So without really explaining why, I excused myself from the table, and feigning tiredness, I slinked off to bed. Once there, I laid painfully awake and aware of everything around me. I could hear Roz and Peter laughing and having a great time while I laid there entertaining thoughts of how cool it would be to fly out of my bedroom window. Bits of the conversation going on in the kitchen would drift into my awareness. Were they really talking about Roy Rogers and the Lone Ranger? Why?
I head round Stu's on Ryland Crescent for some blow. The room is full, but Stu's the only one I know. Smoker's rules require I stay around, at least for just one split. But then the bong it makes a round, soon I'm on my bed.
I get a little bit too stoned, I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned, I get a little bit too stoned.
Bloodshot eyes make contact briefly through the smoke. Smiles at me as though secretly I'm a joke. And then I realize that everyone is laughing at me now. Well, I just can't trust anyone. You know I need to live somehow. Yeah. 'Cause I'm a little bit too stoned.
I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned.
Well, what seemed like a few months later, Peter left and Roz came to bed. As soon as she laid down, I started explaining the problems I was having with this experience. The coffee, the movie screen, the desire to leap out the window. What happened then only made things way worse. Roz just stared at me with watery eyes. Her eyes seemed to say that she could hear what I was saying, but she didn't respond at all. I began to feel concerned. I began to beg her to speak to me. Again, she looked as if she could hear me. Why wouldn't she answer me? I began to beg her to say anything. Roz, please talk to me. I began to panic. I raised up on my knees astride her, and I grabbed her shoulders and I started to shake her as if this would somehow snap her out of this stupor. She looked me straight in the eye and, struggling to speak, said,
I love you.
That's exactly what it sounded like. I'm not kidding. I said, oh, I love you. And then she repeated,
I love you.
This minor victory over the drug somehow gave me enough relief to lay back down and at least try to sleep.
I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned.
Somehow, I survived that bizarre night, and I woke up feeling okay. But feeling okay and being okay are two very different things. I was at that time collecting unemployment insurance. I had been laid off from a really good job, and I was expecting to be hired back eventually, but I had to go to the unemployment office each week to get my book stamped before I would receive a check. So that morning, I got on the bus to go to the unemployment office. It was not a simple trip. I had to take two different buses to get there, and it would take the better part of a day to go, wait online, get my book stamped by the grouchy lady there, and come back home. I got on the bus, paid my fare, and asked for the necessary transfer to the second bus. I walked to the back of the bus, sat down, and looked down at the transfer to read it and make sure I had the right one. A voice somewhere in the front of the bus said, "Sir?" I sort of half noticed it. It didn't seem to be directed at me. But then it became more insistent. "Sir! Sir!" I looked up and saw the source of the voice. It was the woman at the unemployment office desk, and I was the next person in line. Oh my God. I stepped forward, terrified. How the hell did I get here? How the hell did the bus turn into the unemployment office? Suddenly, I imagined that large block letters were printed on my forehead with just one word: stoned. As I stepped up to the counter, that woman seemed to be looking directly at the word on my forehead. I handed her the unemployment book. She stamped it and held it out towards me. I leaned forward, got up off the couch, and changed the channel. I had been stoned out of my mind for at least 24 hours. To this day, I have no idea how I managed to get back to my own apartment sitting in front of the television. Also, to this day, I've never really been much of a drug guy. I'll take a handful of aspirins now and then if it really hurts, but that's it. And so, there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. You now know what has been one of my dirty little secrets, that I am absolutely immune to the spliff, but not at all immune to the little flower from which all opiates grow.
Poppy.
As always, there will be details, links, and credits to what you have just heard in the show notes. And you will find those show notes by visiting digitalflotsam.org. And now a young man who needs no help with his vivid imagination gives us the final benediction.
And P-Dub holded the microphone.